Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer. In the past week or so, several high-profile local cases of embarrassing emails and videos have gone viral online. And because of that, the power of the internet to root out the truth and expose questionable behavior, or even illegal behavior, has come under scrutiny. We're going to be talking about these online responses in a few minutes. But first, WBUR's Andrew Phelps joins us to update us on these local cases. Hi, Andrew.
Hi, Sasha.
So first, of course, there was that case of the 16-year-old fugitive arrested at Roxbury Community College.
That's right. And video of that arrest made its way to YouTube, of course. Police are seeing what some people are calling excessive force, and that was in the news.
Oh, my God.
Yo, no, I gotta get these dudes. I gotta get these. They're kicking them too, dog.
So that was one local case of something that the people involved probably wished hadn't got online.
Exactly.
Then there was that case of the freelance writer, Monica Gaudio, whose article was used in Cooksource magazine, this Western mass food magazine, without her permission.
That's right. And the internet community cried foul after Monica blogged about the incident and posted an email chain with the magazine's editor, Judith Griggs, in which Griggs falls short of apologizing and instead insists that, quote, everything on the internet is public domain. I spoke with freelance writer Monica Gaudio afterward about her reaction.
I posted it on Wednesday night, and then on Thursday morning is when I saw that it went all over the internet, and then it kind of went crazy after that.
And in case you heard the beeping, that was Canadian radio on the other line. No joke, trying to interview
because everybody wanted to talk
story.
To her.
That's
she was
right.
An accidental celebrity. So then we have this third local case. There was this Hingham woman. She's a white woman. She was caught on film berating racially her black mail carrier. That video has also been making the rounds and getting very, very strong reaction from the online community. Most of the audio we're about to hear has been all over the web, but I still want to say that there's language in here that might offend people.
Don't do that, ma'am. Please don't.
I don't want the letter. Give me the cards back.
Ma'am, please don't do that.
I said I don't want the letter. Give me the cards back.
Ma'am, you already signed for
it. If I keep it, I sign. I don't want it.
Ma'am, please.
It's not for me.
Can you just bring it back to the office instead?
No. Take it back because it's not mine.
Ma'am, I cannot give you this.
Why do you want the signatures? You want me to lock you up for life, you
ma'am.
And I'm not prejudiced, but right now I'm getting real pissed off.
Ma'am, why are you calling me names? I mean, I'm just delivering your bill.
So the online community has condemned this woman after watching this very uncomfortable video. Her name is Erica Winchester of Hingham. Of course, we didn't know that when the video first surfaced, and that came to light in comment threads and blog posts that followed. The video went viral, and now her home phone number and address are posted in comment threads on YouTube and elsewhere, which seems a little threatening to some people. Now we read on Wicked Local Hingham that the woman has been getting a lot of harassing phone calls, she says, and that police have added patrols to her street to keep her protected from possible threats.
So all this got us thinking about the power of the internet to do good things and to do bad things. You know, and to talk more about this is Michael Fitzgerald. Michael's a freelance reporter. He covers innovation and its impact on people and communities. He's also a current fellow at Harvard's Nieman Foundation for Journalism. So welcome to Radio Boston, Michael.
Thanks. Great to be here.
Michael, the three cases we've talked about are cases in which the online community sees what it believes is an injustice, and it acts or reacts, at least online, to try to address these wrongs, which in some ways is sort of a modern version of things we've seen for a long time.
It is. We would have called it mob justice at one point in the 20th century. It was, you know, the posse phenomenon in the U.S. West. I mean, this is as old as, you know, Pericles in Athens with the mob and what it wanted to do.
Burning witches, you put it in that category?
Yes, bank runs. I mean, all of these things are similar phenomenon in terms of our psychology.
So in many of these cases, and certainly in most of these online cases, people who are weighing in have no real vested interest in it. They're just sort of, you would think, disinterested observers. Why do people latch on and want to be part of this online crowd? crowd, the mob, as you call it.
Yeah, the internet seems to amplify what is already something that we're familiar with. And I should say, too, that we don't necessarily understand why there is, you know, this reaction to things in the real world either. I mean, we have some ideas, but they seem to kind of just bubble up and then, you know, disappear. You can't predict them. You can't sort of control them in the way that you might like to. In some cases, because you can obviously use this for your own benefit. But why do we do it on the internet? I think some of it is that, you know, you're friends of a friend, and or you have a friend who's had an injustice done to them. Say you know some writer who just got laid off, and you hear about this person whose story has been stolen on the web. I mean, there are thousands of stories that get stolen on the web that don't have this kind of reaction. But here's one that just in the moment strikes you, and you want to do something about it for your friend, even though you don't know this other person.
And of course, we don't always know what's going to go viral, what's going to take off. Many people post many things on YouTube that they hope will take off, and they never get very many hits at all. And then you have an occasional phenom.
Exactly. I mean, and so that's where I say that there's a kind of mystery to this. What is it that does strike a chord, and why in these cases? And in each of them, you could probably look and say there's a different motivating factor. Someone has had something happen to them, or you know, this is also something where, you know, you also can feel like this is an easy thing to do. This is clearly wrong. I'm going to respond to this, and I can weigh in and take care of this in a way that, say, I can't take care of poverty or help someone in Haiti to kind of immediately rebuild. So there's a kind of instant gratification here.
Listeners, we're talking about these many cases recently, and in particular three recent local cases in which illegal or questionable behavior has gone online, gone viral, and the internet plays a sort of vigilante mob role. We want to know if you have seen, for example, the video of the Hingham woman racially berating her mail carrier, whether you've seen the blog and the online site about the Cook's Magazine in Western Mass that took a article without attribution. We want to know if you feel like justice was done in those cases or things spin out of control when that happens. We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm with Michael Fitzgerald. He's a freelance journalist and a fellow at Harvard's Nieman Foundation, and also Andrew Phelps, who's a reporter for WBUR.org. Michael and Andrew, I wonder if you would both comment on this. One of the things that the internet can do very well is get a lot of information public very quickly. In the case of this Hingham woman who was berating her mail carrier, suddenly everyone knew her name and where she lived. I think her phone number was posted.
The smoking gun had looked up prior arrest records and found that she had a small history with the police in Hingham.
Exactly. So on one hand, the internet can very quickly find a lot of information that maybe one or two reporters working alone couldn't find as quickly. But can you talk about sort of the other hand side of this? Michael Fitzgerald.
You mean the how we're supposed to sort of pull back and take a pause and not just rush to judgment?
Do you think that's what we should do?
I mean, professionally, yes. That's some of what we have to do as journalists. But for the general public, I mean, sometimes the rush to judgment can lead to good things. I mean, there is a wisdom to crowds as well as sort of a mob psychology. And so the question is sort of knowing the difference and knowing when. And so I think if you start to do things that become personal, like let's post this person's name and phone number and street address and when they'd like to walk their dog, that is perhaps going over a line that you don't want to cross.
Of course, Andrew Phelps, as a reporter, sometimes it's your job to go find information. Do you consider it on balance helpful when suddenly all that information is just flooding out on the internet and the job is sort of done for the reporters who would otherwise have had to do it?
I do find it helpful, and it's especially tricky for me as a blogger who faces the same need to get information posted quickly and to make it interesting and not feel like I'm 24 hours behind everyone else, but still meet WBUR standards for fairness and accuracy, of course. Before the internet existed or before the crowd played such a prominent role in the mid-2000s on the internet, I could have started making phone calls, visiting this person's house, checking records, but it might have taken days for me to get any kind of information about this woman. In the case of the Cook Source story, within 3 or 4 hours, there was a Google spreadsheet being updated in real time with dozens of apparent examples of plagiarism, other examples of plagiarism on the part of this magazine. As a journalist, that was really helpful as a stepping stone or as a starting point to go vet this information and use some of it as part of a more balanced story. I couldn't live without that kind of information nowadays.
Even in the days when most people just got their news from newspapers, we always had to wonder whether we were getting the full story. I think sometimes we get much more of the story online. But Michael Fitzgerald, do you feel like, you know, there's clearly a still, are we getting the whole story, or does this little 30-second video only tell us a very narrow piece of it?
Well, this 30-second video probably only tells us a narrow piece of the story. In this case, it's not like, say, the Rodney King thing where you had minutes of what seemed to be over-the-top behavior going on. This is 30 seconds. You don't know what happened before. You don't know what was said. You don't know, you know, any of that kind of stuff. So we can, in this case, sort of step over a line because we don't know something and we're just reacting. And you know, on an evolutionary level, that's what we do. We react to stuff when it seems stressful and yeah.
I want to bring in a caller from Lowell, and this is David. And David, what is your thought about sort of the role the internet plays when things that illegal or questionable things are posted online and the whole world online seems to react?
Well, it's really big in certain areas. I'm part of a group. I don't want to really call it a group or a website that's like specific for this, but people of this website are big on finding people that are doing things that are just wrong, especially, you know, like the woman over in England that put the cat in the garbage can and found out every piece of documentation about her.
Mm. Right.
There was a young girl in the Bronx, I believe, that put a cat into an oven, and they found every single thing about the school that it went to, about every bit of information on MySpace and all that stuff. And it's just, we're out of heart of the future, I guess you could call it.
But David, you know, the woman you just mentioned, I think, as you said, she was from England. There was a video of her putting a cat in a trash can. You live in Massachusetts. Why do you care? Why do you take out time to expose something that happened in England in some small block somewhere?
Well, I, like everybody else, cats, and I don't want to see anything bad happen to them. You know, they're innocent, they're cute. You know, it's wrong to just do that to an animal, and, you know, that person went to justice, deservedly so.
Thank you for that. So Andrew Phelps and also Michael Fitzgerald, all right, the caller just talked about justice. So, but is this justice when this is what we see online, Andrew?
Well, here's what concerns me, and this plays into the local stories, is sometimes these justice seekers sort of cross the line into becoming bullies. You know, in the case of this woman from Hingham, we don't know a lot about her other than what we can see in this video. With her name and phone number and address being posted and police presence on her street, we're seeing a sort of vigilantism that crosses the line into, you know, like you mentioned, Michael, this mob mentality.
Yeah, and so that it's in one sense, okay, so it's harmless to post her name on there, and so people know this, and they I mean, she can turn off her internet connection. But let's say somebody decides, oh, I'm so mad at this person, I'm going to go down and give her a piece of my mind in person, and then what happens?
It escalates.
It can escalate. I mean, I'm thinking of the Oxbow incident, which is a novel, but is based around a bit of mob justice that turns into someone being killed who was innocent of any crime.
And these stories that are portrayed as very black and white cases of good and evil suddenly become much more muddied.
Let me bring in another caller. This is Sandra calling from Randolph. And what's your thought about all this?
I just think this is where we're at right now. This is the era. This is Big Brother watching you. People used to get away with things, illegal things, or, you know, like the student getting beaten up by the police. You know, people are watching, and we need to be more observant, even though it is bombarding us with a lot of emotional stuff that sometimes we can't contain it, because when I saw it, I got angry with a young man getting beaten up. And then with the plagiarism thing, I was appalled that the woman didn't even apologize. And you're saying, but this is what's happening now. This is where we're at. Some of us don't even have any morals anymore.
Sandra, thank you for that. So Michael Fitzgerald, Andrew Phelps, we just heard someone say it creates accountability. If people are watching, you can't get away with what you used to. Is that an upside of this?
I think it can be an upside. It's a very powerful thing. The internet's sort of promise, at least in a political sense, was that it would expose wrongdoing, or let us expose wrongdoing at the government level, and then help us to do something about it as a general populace, make us more involved. But that's not always how it works, and that's the thing I think we have to kind of be careful of as individuals.
And of course, it's a largely unedited world, which has many problematic aspects.
Exactly, and this is where journalists have to learn to walk the line and work with the crowd, because you know, what I find is the common thread in all of these stories is there's some piece of evidence that is very hard not to react to. It's very hard to watch these videos and not feel a strong reaction. Obviously, as journalists, we try to get both sides of the story and report only what we know to be true. But in many cases on the internet, these justice seekers have a conclusion and they work very hard to find evidence that meets their conclusion. This person is bad. Well, journalists can fall prey to that sometimes as well. And I'm sure Michael can speak to that. But obviously, we have to try not to go into a story with a predetermined conclusion.
I think in the internet, as journalists, too, we have to be very careful of sometimes when you rush to judgment or you make these things sort of starkly black or white, it helps your traffic, and that can be that improves your business, and that, you know, keeps you on top of things, and you know, that's very tempting but also very dangerous. We that's not what we're supposed to be about in the business. And sometimes, as in with the earlier case in Hingham around bullying, after you've stepped back, you start to find other things that don't fit into the black and white, that make the picture grayer, that maybe change your perspective and cause people to sort of sometimes perhaps even feel regret that they responded so sharply in the first place.
Thanks to both of you very much. I appreciate it. Michael Fitzgerald. Michael is a freelance journalist and a fellow at Harvard's Nieman Foundation. Thank you. And Andrew Phelps is a reporter for WBUR.org. Andrew's been writing about these cases on our Hubbub blog, and you can go there and see all of that, including reaction, at WBUR.org. Up next, a dark trip down memory lane. A 19th century serial killer and the scientist who caught him. We'll take a closer look at how this duo shaped forensic science as we know it. We'll be back after a short break. Stay with us. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer. This is Radio Boston.